Hello, my name is Cheryl Cohen, and I'm the president of Arthritis Consumer Experts, or ACE. ACE provides education and training to people with arthritis. We also help to empower people living with all forms of arthritis to take control of their disease and to take action in healthcare and research decision making. I'm also a person living with rheumatoid arthritis. We're here today with Gordon Whitehead. Gordon is the co-chair of the Alliance for the Canadian Arthritis Program in Canada. We're really thrilled to have Gordon here in the studio with us. Gordon is a longtime leader in the community. He is a person living with rheumatoid arthritis, and for some time, 32 years, so he certainly knows what living with inflammatory arthritis is all about. Gordon has a huge, huge, huge track record of leadership, and he's going to speak to that a little bit. But we're also here to talk to Gordon about the Alliance and the work of the Alliance and the importance of the work of this coalition, if you will, of arthritis organizations in Canada working so hard on behalf of Canadians living with arthritis. So I'm just thrilled to welcome you, Gordon, to this Joint Health Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Cheryl. Yeah. And I have to say, before we start, that I'm thrilled with your constant innovation efforts in communication. I've been hearing all about podcasting, but this is my first opportunity to experience it firsthand. And I think that one of the challenges for all of us doing work in the arthritis domain is messaging, mm-hmm. and getting that messaging out to the people who need to get it, and the primary group that needs to get it are, of course, people with arthritis. And your organization has done remarkable work in that respect. So we're blazing a little bit of a trail here, I think, and I'm proud to be part of that.
Thank you so much, Gordon. It's all very flattering, and I'm very appreciative, and I'm glad you think that these programs make a difference for people living with arthritis. That's sort of why we're in it. So thank you so much. Gordon, I'm wondering, first of all, if as one volunteer to another, how in the heck did you get roped into being a co-chair of such an important but also sort of behemoth group, in that it encompasses so many in the arthritis community? What interested you in stepping forward when the call came out to people with arthritis? We need someone to come in and help lead our community. What intrigued you about this volunteer role?
Cheryl, I sometimes observe that when I'm asked that kind of question, that when you are, as I am now, a retired person, mm-hmm. and you indicate that you're available for volunteer work, the first thing you hear is a noise that resembles that made by your kitchen carburetor. There's a huge need for people to do volunteer work, mm-hmm. and particularly in our disease community, because a lot of people who have the volition or the aptitude are also very, very disabled by the disease and not always able to contribute. Mm-hmm. I sometimes also say that because I have had the disease for many years and sport as a result, a great number of artificial body components to the degree where I think I should carry in my wallet, if injured, in case of accident, conduct to the nearest welding shop rather than to an emergency ward.
Yeah.
I feel I really am deeply grateful for what I've been able to get out of the Canadian medical system. It has its flaws, it has its warts, but my goodness me, it also has its virtues, and I think all responsible consumers really have an obligation to try to put something back into it, to improve it, and to make it even better serve the needs of our disease community.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I think that kind of volunteerism, and informed volunteerism, I should say, is so critical to actually moving policy development forward. If we want a patient-centered healthcare system, then patients or consumers, as we refer to them, have to be involved in shaping that policy. So I couldn't agree with you more. Your history, your work history certainly lends itself to your volunteer duties over the last past year, and certainly I would hope into the future. Being a foreign diplomat for the Government of Canada, I'm sure you've had to sit at a table and try to get everyone to focus on the problem. And I think that skill set is so valuable to the arthritis community. And I just, on behalf of myself and millions of others who live with the disease, thank you so much for taking on this leadership role. Well, it means a lot.
Well, thank you, Cheryl. And coming from you, that is indeed a compliment. I would just add that one of the things that I acquired as a result of moving all over the world was an appreciation for the way other systems of healthcare work, or in many cases, don't work. And that, if anything, has heightened my desire to make ours the best in the world. We have the capacity to do that in this country. We have an open process open to us. We have a functioning democracy. It's got to be sort of hustled along at times, but we all have the opportunity to do that once we're really engaged and, as you say, informed. I think it's vital that consumers be really informed, because when we're dealing with policymakers, when we're dealing with politicians, or even when we're having a dialogue with our healthcare providers, information is power.
Yeah.
And good information is good power.
Yeah, I agree again, totally. We're in a very agreeable mood here.
We
today,
are.
Aren't we? Gordon, I guess in terms of this conversation with you about the Alliance, I'd love it if you could share. We've written about the Alliance and the work of the Alliance, and particularly that of the Summit for Standards for Arthritis Prevention and Care in our Joint Health Monthly publication. But for a Joint Health podcast listeners, for people who are just tuning in, turning on for the first time, I'm wondering if you could share with us, you know, who the Alliance is.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean when we hear the word Alliance?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we can talk a little bit about why the Alliance was created. So start with the who question. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things I think that is a challenge for most people who go into the field of volunteerism in arthritis is that there's a confusing alphabet soup of players involved. And it takes the novice quite a long time to sort of figure out what these three-letter acronyms are. And in fact, we have a consumer, Jean Le Garé, who's actually written almost an acronym encyclopedia to help people with that process. But if I characterize the groupings within the Alliance, I would say there's a research grouping. There's a grouping that consists of caregivers. Mm-hmm. There are consumers. There are these important groupings, and they find themselves in a whole range of organizations. I'll mention a few.
Sure.
Just a few.
Sure.
Because otherwise people are going to succumb to alphabetitis. There's your own group, Arthritis Consumer Experts, which does so much work to bring information about the disease to consumers and to assist in the empowerment of consumers. There's the Arthritis Research Center of Canada, which is, I'm proud to say, based here in Vancouver, which does wonderful cutting-edge research into arthritis. There's the Canadian Arthritis Network, which is a conglomerate of scientists who are pooling their knowledge and expertise in arthritis. There are foundations like the Canadian Orthopedic Foundation. There's the Cochrane Collaboration, which is a wonderful library, if you like, of information on arthritis, and it's accessible through their website to consumers. I could go on and on, but sure. Essentially, and I wouldn't neglect either industry is in with us.
Yes.
So we've got more than 20 members in the organization, and so it's a broad spectrum organization, but it empowers the consumer component, unites them to the research component, pulls them together into those who actually deliver, in many cases, the health care that we need, mm-hmm. and tries to put these ingredients in a common pot and boil them down to make something of an effective stew, if you like,
yes.
or soup
right.
that works for everybody.
Right.
That's what it's all about.
Well,
really.
I think it's the concept of the alliance is so is such a valuable one, and having he's been a part of it since its inception, I've had the privilege of seeing it grow and mature, and actually firsthand be able to see how these groups can share knowledge, can work together. No one group can be expert in it all. It takes a village, as Hillary Clinton would say.
Said, yeah.
It takes a village to make things good for people with arthritis, and I think that's what's so wonderful about seeing all these different groups get involved. Why? I'm curious to know, and certainly to get your view, Gordon, as a co-chair of the Alliance, why the Alliance formed? What mm-hmm. really was the impetus behind the formation of the Alliance?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I could summarize that mm-hmm. by saying if you flip over an American coin and see the Latin motto on it, E pluribus unum, mm. it kind of summarizes what lies at the essence of the need for an alliance, and that is from many, one. It's the need to interact, particularly in this country, with government
okay.
as a unified, coherent voice. Government doesn't respond well to fragmented messaging. And many politicians, and I know you know this because you're always deeply involved in dialoguing mm-hmm. with various levels of government, increasingly are beleaguered individuals with short attention spans. So you need to come to them if you want them to respond to you with a unified package of messages. And they need, in turn, to feel confident that when you say something, you're speaking for a broad spectrum of interests, that you've taken the time to jawbone through and to reconcile different points of view within your own community about. So it's essentially the need to bring the strengths of the various players and their own expertise into a unified whole, mm-hmm. and then deliver that as a coherent message that government can actually ingest and then respond to.
Right. I think that's so, as you say, I've spoken to a number of politicians in my time of service in the arthritis community, and over and over and over again, they say, well, I heard something else from Joe Bloggs down the street. So, as you say, that uniform, unified, coherent message is so critical, and they also want solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I have found government to be quite amenable mm-hmm. to trying to do what you want, but you have to have a really clear picture of what it is you want and then help them try to figure out how to make a plan and actually insert the plan into their agenda. They're both political agenda and the sort of bureaucratic agenda, if you will, recognizing that there are certainly two different levels of government that are trying to make things
yeah.
happen for the citizenry of Canada.
I think that's absolutely spot on,
yeah.
Cheryl. And I think that the idea of coming to government coherently is not in order to turn them on a spit more effectively, although occasionally, you know, a consumer has to do that. But it's really more to help them find solutions. Yeah. I think predicated underneath any democratic structure is the assumption that the elected official really wants to do good. But many, many politicians, quite frankly, are confused and intimidated by all the intricacies and the complexities they confront in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. They know that they're going to probably open the Globe and Mail or whatever their preferred reading matter is, and find themselves being chastised for some lapse in terms of the healthcare system. And this is particularly true over the last decade as our population ages and as the demands on the system accelerate. So very often they're hungry for solutions. And if you can come to them with something that provides a clear path of understanding into some of the more complex areas of the system, where they can achieve a clear win in political terms that's also a win for you, that's really where ideally you want to be.
Absolutely.
If you can.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. You know, it makes sense. Here's this alliance. You've got all this broad expertise under an umbrella called the Alliance for the Canadian Arthritis Program. There is a real need, obviously, to create the alliance because government saw our community for a long time as being very fractured and not all firing from the same cylinder.
Right.
So that makes sense, and I probably, hopefully, makes sense to our listeners. And if what I've just said is true, that these things make sense, then what has the alliance done since it formed? And I think it formed, what, back in 2000, late 2002?
Yeah. It was a process, I would say, of gelling. And it was a process of gelling around the recognition that in unity there is strength.
Yeah.
And I guess there would be three primary evolutionary benchmarks along the road. So without making this talk unduly historical,
yes,
I would just mention that probably the platform that first saw the alliance coalescing was what was called the Osteoarthritis Consensus Conference.
Right.
And I think that saw the gathering of some of the nuclear elements in the alliance and a dawning recognition that this was the way to go. Mm-hmm. And then that was followed by another very important congregation of arthritis players around the frontiers of inflammatory joint disease. Mm-hmm. And going down the road to the last major, if I can call it, an evolutionary step, I think when we swung down from the trees and started walking across the pampas, so to speak, it was the summit on developing standards of arthritis prevention and care,
right,
which we held last year in Ottawa. And that was really an extraordinary, in a sense, culmination in this evolutionary path, because we brought together more than 200 players, and I'm proud to say the largest single component represented in that gathering were the consumers. And we hammered out a package of what we considered to be national standards for arthritis prevention and care. We made a package of 12 coherent standards. And that was a really major job. And you know, because you were one of the godmothers, you were there at the baptismal font, you know how much work went into that. But we were very, very proud of that. It marked really a milestone in the development, not only of ACAP, but of the whole arthritis community. And it was a tremendously empowering process for the consumers particularly, but it also marked a really useful fusion of all of these principal player groups around the development of a set of coherent, doable, actionable standards.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point, that it just wasn't trotting off for a fun meeting in Ottawa. Charming as Ottawa is, you know,
in November,
it was, it could have been colder. It wasn't so bad. There wasn't snow on the ground. But I think that they were actionable, that everyone was galvanized around the thought that they had to be, one, not only evidence-based. So these weren't just standards that are plucked out of the air and we said, oh, well, you know, we should do X and we should do Y. Well, we did make those statements, and they're very strong statements. I love the fact that the standards have the word must in them.
Yes.
There's a sense of urgency, of importance to the standards, just in the way that they're written, let alone what it is they're attempting to achieve. They're really focused on closing gaps, and significant gaps in many of the areas, in the care or the quality of the care that a person with arthritis receives in Canada. The thing that I most adored about the product, if you will, the end product, which was a set of standards, was that they aimed at delivering a quality. And
yes.
I think this is such an issue in Canada and in our healthcare system, that we have such huge differences in quality and availability, equity in healthcare. It's tragic, in my opinion. It's tragic that someone can get access to a medication in Saskatchewan and someone in New Brunswick is fighting for it from their hospital bed. They're actually in hospital because of their disease, and not even then will a bean counter say, oh yeah, we think that's more cost effective to get this lady out of the hospital, and so we're going to give her the drug. It's just, yeah. To me, it just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the standards make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they really are ones that can be implemented. And as you say, people with arthritis were the largest contingent of participants at the summit. And I'm very proud of that. I know that you were part of that planning process, Gordon, a very important part. And we had solidarity around that goal, to make people with arthritis the strong driver of the work that was done at that summit. And I think we earned not only the respect of our community by doing that, I think we earned trust in our community. I think we built or rebuilt trust in our community. And I certainly think that government trusts the Alliance to speak for people with arthritis in a unified way. A coherent way, as you've pointed out.
I think that's absolutely true, Cheryl. One of the challenges for us, as you know, as Canadians, is that constitutionally, responsibility for delivering health care is vested in the provinces.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the foundation stone for Medicare in the Canada Health Act, but essentially the federal government's leverage to bring about uniformity or equity in the delivery of medical care is primarily fiscal.
Mm.
And that the Canada Health Act, if you like, is a vehicle for translating some of that fiscal muscle into this is what you must do, provinces, if you want us to keep filling up your cash drawer.
Right.
But it's not constitutional muscle. So that being the case, without a constant effort to drive through standards, and I emphasize mm-hmm. that word again because
yeah.
that was so central to what we were doing with the summit, without a concentrated focus on driving through standards, we're always at risk of dissipating into 10 solitudes in this country, or now that the North is into the equation, I guess more accurately, 11 solitudes.
Sure.
And because the provinces are differentiated not only in terms of their own histories and characters and institutions, but their own economic bases vary, hence we have equalization formulas, their ability or their willingness to sustain funding elements in the healthcare system is very varied. And it's part, I think, of our responsibility as Canadian citizens to struggle for the realization of equity in our healthcare system. I, as a Vancouverite, am ashamed if I think that my fellow citizen in Newfoundland is suffering an inadequate element in their essential healthcare because of where they live, and not because of any other determinant. This is something we need to really work at, and the summit standards were designed to address.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. It can't be good enough for government, our government, and we own the government. We form the government by casting our ballots at elections at the local community, at the regional, provincial level, and federal levels. I mean, we own the government. We are the government, and we've selected people to be our voice at government, and I think that it's really imperative upon all people with arthritis in this country to talk to their elected official, to tell them what is going on for them, and to help inform their elected representative, because they can't be expert in all things. You know, they shouldn't be expected, but they should certainly be expert in your thing,
That's
which is
right.
arthritis.
And if they're not, it's your responsibility to help them along the road.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely. We have a lot of people coming to our workshops, Gordon, and they don't understand, or they do understand, but feel shy or a bit fearful of actually saying something to their elected official. And, you know, we talk about how that's a right. Mm-hmm. That's part of our right as being a Canadian citizen. Mm-hmm. We get to end. Our elected officials want to hear from us because if they are hearing a number of people coming forward, and if one out of five Canadians has arthritis, there'd be a lot of us coming forward to our elected officials, telling them what our needs are, just through the political motivation, would be maybe a bit more focused on helping to solve the problem for one of five of their constituents than not.
Right.
And so just that community grassroots sort of engagement is so critical. And it leads me to sort of my next point around the standards, which really I think is the focus, it sounds from you, Gordon, of the Alliance over the next certainly year or several years.
Absolutely.
There are 12, you said, definitive standards, standards that the Alliance feels can be implemented.
Right.
Obviously, you can't do everything all at once. There's limited people power and there's limited financial resources in order to do that. But are there a few that you've identified as being sort of really hot? Are they to the boil point on the stovetop?
Right.
And if so, what are they?
Sure.
Yeah.
An excellent question, because it would be like, building a ladder with 12 rungs, and then you decide you're going to ascend the ladder. Well, obviously, you've got to have some idea about which rung you put your foot on first, or you're not going to get to the top.
Right.
So after we had devised the standards, we held another meeting to thrash around the standards that we felt should be priority. And we came up with three priority standards, and that's where we've been focusing our energies over the past year. And the first one is awareness building. This is really vital in arthritis. I want to emphasize that arthritis isn't really complicated, and I know you feel strongly about that. It can be perceived that way. It does present challenges in terms of image building and awareness raising, because it's a family of diseases. And so somebody in one corner of the family can create an image of the disease that may not be accurate in terms of broad picture terms.
Right.
But essentially, you know, the arthritis diseases fall into two primary categories. The inflammatory group, which are essentially autoimmune diseases, and then the wear and tear group, or the trauma group, which are the osteoarthritic family. So it's not that complicated. And the results of both tend to merge at some point in the disease process. It's a chronic disease. By chronic, I mean once you've got it, it's with you. It's a companion. And you're going to have to come to grips with it. I think when I say awareness raising is our most important standard, I would address that to two dimensions. One is, how do we go about raising awareness in people who don't have it?
Right.
And those groups might include the politicians we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we go about raising awareness among those who do have it? How do we sharpen their knowledge base, bring better information to them, not only so that they can help manage their own care better, because you've got to know what you need to get from the system in order to begin to get into it and come out of it as a winner.
Right.
And I know you've written a book on that very subject. So those are the two primary areas where we need to build awareness.
Yeah.
And that's what we've really been working at. And awareness involves all sorts of things, but it means dialoguing with consumers, keeping in touch with what's happening in groundbreaking research, making sure research in our field is properly funded, because it's been a bit of a fiscal foster child, as you know, and there needs to be a lot more money spent in the research domain.
Right.
It means getting information out to people who need it for their effective treatment. It also means getting information into the hands of those who shape the policies around the forms that that treatment will take.
Right.
So those are the sort of targets.
For the awareness standard.
For the awareness standard.
Well, I think, as you know, I feel very passionate about education and awareness. It's really the focus of all that we do here at ACE.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we spend a lot of time saying, particularly to government,
mm-hmm.
arthritis kills.
Mm-hmm.
We have a number of diseases in the autoimmune bin, as you characterized it, Gordon, that kill you if they're not treated. When you're diagnosed with cancer in this country, you are immediately triaged into best medicine, best clinical practice streams
mm-hmm.
that address your disease in very short order. Well, a disease like rheumatoid arthritis is just like cancer. It's an autoimmune disease. There are clear targets to be attacked therapeutically, yet we can't even get drugs approved on formularies and gain access to them. And I mean, we're both apples,
right?
Cancer
right.
And rheumatoid arthritis—they're apples, but one is making it into the basket, and the
right.
other one is just falling to the ground and rotting.
Right. One of
and
the ironies.
I mean, I just yeah. it sickens me.
Yeah. Well, one of the ironies for arthritis is that this perception that it doesn't kill is perhaps in part a derivative of the fact that it isn't the villain that's written down on the death certificate.
Right.
It isn't the Colonel Plum in the library with the lead pipe. But in actual fact, it was.
Yes.
It was the primary driver that may have led to premature death
mm-hmm.
And or other comorbidities. I mean, you mentioned cancer. There's a linkage between lymphoma
mm-hmm.
And rheumatoid arthritis
mm-hmm.
because they are both malfunctioning immune diseases.
Right.
I'm here to say that Colonel Plum with the lead pipe did us in the library, and we should be on the death certificate far more often than we are.
Yeah.
But just to capsulate what the standard is,
yes,
for awareness, specifically the wording for the listeners who may not have encountered the standard, is that every Canadian must be aware of arthritis. Mm. So that embraces, as I say, both those who have it and those who need to know about it in order to deal with it effectively.
Right, and I think that segment of the population, people who don't have it, really should get interested about arthritis now, because research is telling us, we're learning through the very innovative and world-leading research going on in this country around osteoarthritis, and that there are things that can be done to prevent it. And let me tell you, if you have osteoarthritis, even in one joint, it can diminish the quality of your life to such a degree that there are times you don't want to live. You're in pain, that yeah. much pain. You think, oh, geez, I've lived my whole life to get this.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, proper exercise, proper weight maintenance, proper diet, all kinds of things that we can do in terms of lifestyle adjustments can actually help or minimize the onset, to either prevent or help to minimize the onset mm-hmm. or the impact of osteoarthritis if, in fact, you do get it.
Yes.
So even school-aged children should be taught about how to deal with a knee injury, for example, one of the most common areas to develop osteoarthritis, and due to an earlier injury. So if you get injured, how do you heal from the injury? How do you rehab properly so that when you go back to sport, you're not actually working on developing an osteoarthritic joint?
Exactly.
So I think that's where that awareness piece for people who don't have it is so, so critical.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the things that we highlighted in the summit report is just how common arthritis is. Mm. I mean, it currently afflicts 4 million Canadians. And as our population ages, we're looking at a disease that will embrace 6 to 6.5 million Canadians. I mean, this is a huge disease burden.
Yeah.
And when you trace the impact of that through the need to keep our workforce engaged, we're an aging population, and the burden on the healthcare system, there has to inescapably be much better preventative strategies in play than there have been in the past.
Yeah, I agree totally. So moving from awareness, I mm-hmm. love the lead-in as one of three priorities
mm-hmm.
that you probably can't implement anything else about arthritis or standards unless you're aware of arthritis and its
right,
impact.
Right.
So with that one out on the table,
right.
I'm curious to learn the second
the other,
priority.
The other rungs,
two. Yeah,
the other
ladder rungs.
Rungs.
Yes.
Okay.
So we've stepped on the first
rung. Right, we've got our foot on the ladder.
Yes.
Okay, number two is all relevant health professionals must be able to perform a valid, standardized, age-appropriate musculoskeletal screening examination.
Critical.
Yeah. And that standard addresses a number of elements. One, we're looking at a looming crisis in the availability both of general practitioners in this country. If you talk to young people, you'll find that many of them simply don't have a GP, can't get on a GP's caseload. So the GP has been the guy at the center of the medical system who pushes all the buttons on your behalf.
Right.
And he can also push the button that sends you sliding down the chute in the direction of a rheumatologist, who is also, I might say, in increasingly short supply. We've only got 270 of them dealing with the whole huge arthritic population.
For 4 million people.
For 4 million people.
Wow.
And we're not keeping pace with their numbers in order to match the 6 to 6.5 million coming around the corner.
Right.
So what that means is that if we're going to get ahead in the disease treatment equation, we've got to determine who's got it, who's showing the early warning signs, and get them streamed appropriately early on. Mm-hmm. So that's why we say all relevant healthcare professionals, because we might, for example, have a system in place whereby a physiotherapist can say, hey, you know, I've just looked at Mrs. Gray's hands, and I'm concerned that I'm seeing in those hands signs of an inflammatory arthritic disease.
Right.
And something needs to be done about that. And that's a complicated interaction on one level, because Mrs. Gray may have been inured to thinking that, well, she's 60 and her hands hurt, but
nothing
isn't that
can
all,
be done about
yeah,
it.
And
yeah,
and isn't that all just part of being 60?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not, right. Mrs. Gray. Things can be done for you, and you need to be aware of that, hence ladder rung number one.
Yes.
And ladder number two, the screening, means that somebody needs to be able to identify that and get you to where you need to be in the medical system early on. And if you can get there, then you're probably not going to be a confused tangle of metal parts like I am. I'm where I am in terms of costly interventional surgeries, largely because at the time I was diagnosed, some of these means of dealing with the disease early on were not effectively in place. We had a different realm of treatments. We had a different protocol.
Right.
We didn't have some of the effective medications we have now.
Right.
But now we do. So if we can catch people showing signs of the disease early on, get them into the right hands and get them onto the right treatment, then we may keep them out of the joint waiting lists and all the other things that are now what you might call the caboose end of the train.
Right.
We need to get up to the engine compartment of the train and start adjusting the speed dials, making sure that we're getting, you know, the cylinders clicking over at the head of the train properly. So that's why we're going after screening.
Oh, I think this is such a valuable standard. It as you say, why treat something at the very end stage when it is most costly to deal with and when it has exacted such a huge toll on the individual living with it in terms of living with pain, fatigue, and just a significant loss of quality of life, not to mention the impact it's had on their ability to plan for a retirement, to work and save money and plan for a retirement. I mean, the golden years are gone for those
right.
people. They lost all hope of having gold
right.
in their latter years. They're now right. working on tin
right.
Because they've not got, they never didn't have the ability to be as productive in their work lives as they could have been. And that's just simply not fair.
Right.
When we have things that can make a difference to them. Something as simple as a detection, a screening program
right.
in place that would detect it. The other thing I love about this standard is that it's relatively easily implemented.
It is.
It's not rocket science.
No.
And all it takes is to get people who have power over policy making to nod their head up and down rather
right.
than from side to side.
Right.
And I guess as a person living with arthritis myself, I find that a bit certainly promising, but also a bit frustrating, because I think all of us have encountered the political system before, and there's a lot of this, oh, well, you know, that solution's not going to work. Well, these
right.
solutions are so doable.
Right.
They're so easily implemented, I think, in the grand scheme of things. We're not talking about building more operating rooms here.
No.
We're actually talking about
keeping
doing
people out of them.
Keeping people out of them, so there will be a lesser need to build
exactly.
expensive ORs and all
exactly.
of the things that go in the OR.
Exactly.
And what about the third standard, Gordon?
Third standard?
Yeah.
Well, for people with particularly the inflammatory arthritis, mm-hmm. the third standard is really crucial. And the third standard reads, every Canadian with arthritis must have timely and equal access to appropriate medications.
Yeah.
Now, I mentioned earlier that one of the complexities of Canadian healthcare delivery is its fractured set of responsibilities between different levels of government.
Right.
And at the time the Canada Health Act was drawn up and National Medicare was born, it was silent on medications. So it never really addressed the need to treat with medications as a huge and significant component of health care. I know it sounds a bit strange in this day and age, and particularly aberrant when it comes to people with arthritis,
yes,
because so much of what constitutes our effective treatment equation turns around medications, turns around access to good pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. But the situation is just that. We have this odd patchwork quilt of difference from one part of the country to the other. We have something on a drug formulary in province A that isn't down there in province B. Very often, to get access to a drug that may even be on the formulary, you've got to demonstrate that you've run through a whole chain of other medications that have failed. In other words, you have to prove failure in order to have a chance at success. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really a ludicrous situation. It's expensive. Think of the number of times that somebody goes back and forth between their rheumatologist and their pharmacist in a struggle to demonstrate failure. And what that means for their life. Mm. I mean, are they dropping out of the labor force? Are they ceasing to be an effective life partner? Are they a young mother not being able to provide care for her children?
Yeah, sadly, the answer to all those questions
is yes. And all by way of showing that that whatever they've got isn't working.
Mm.
You know, this is really ludicrous.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I would say has been really a massive breakthrough in the period that I've had the disease is advances in medication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was diagnosed, and I like to say back when the earth was cooling, you know, the first thing the rheumatologist provided me with was aspirin.
Right.
And when that really didn't do the trick, we marched up to plastic-coated aspirin. How's that for heavy-duty medication? And it was until I had the disease for almost 2 years, and I was on a powerful anti-inflammatory by that point, that we even began a dialogue about taking a disease-modifying drug. Now, in defense of the system, we didn't know nearly as much in those days about how early on in the disease process irreversible joint damage was occurring.
Right.
Thanks to imaging, thanks to research, we know that those things are happening very early in the disease process. Mm-hmm. So timing here is acute. If you're going to keep somebody out of that OR we talked about, if you're going to make sure they remain a productive, contributing, participating individual through the productive years of their lives, mm-hmm. you've got to get the medication they need identified and at their disposal and at their affordable level,
yeah.
or you're going to draw a blank on all the other parts right. of the train we talked about. And in the end, pinch-pennying around access to medications just means you're loading more people into the caboose part of the train, and that's where the seats, ironically, are the most expensive.
Yeah.
So we don't save anything by not allowing people to get access to effective medication early on in the disease process. Plus, and this is by no means the least significant, this is almost an insult to being a Canadian citizen. This is a deprivation of your rights of citizenship by virtue of where you live.
Yeah.
And that's just plain wrong. It's wrong morally, it's wrong ethically, it contradicts what we stand for and what we tried to achieve with national Medicare. So we really have to get past that thicket of what I would call the nattering nabobs of negativism around access to medications. We really do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think you've really summed up, I think, not just for this standard, really the sort of the nexus or the crux of the matter for all of them, which is it is about equality in our healthcare system for people with arthritis. We know that it's probably the chronic disease that has the biggest gaps in care at every single point in the care spectrum, whether it's trying to get a diagnosis, trying to get a treatment, trying to get rehab, trying to get surgery, trying to get rehab from surgery, trying to get home care, to a respectful death. We are robbed of so much of what we know the research says is the best way to go through down that spectrum of life. We're robbed of so much of what is needed. And this just has to be corrected. So the standards, they're a godsend. I look with great eagerness to their full implementation, recognizing you're focusing on these three, and ACE is really eager to participate in any way the Alliance thinks that we can help. And I just want to thank you, Gordon.
But before you cut me off...
Oh, I'm not going to cut you off.
No, I wanted to... I just wanted to mention Arthritis 101.
Oh, right.
Because I think it's so important.
Yeah.
And also, I would be doing you a disservice because this initiative was really something that you developed largely in ACE and that you have brought to the ACAP Alliance. Mm. But Arthritis 101, we're I was going to say unleashing across Canada. We've done it in Quebec City in early November. I've just come back from Ottawa, where we did it in Ottawa for members of parliament, for senators, for their staffs. And it was a vehicle designed to bring impetus to the three key standards.
So you went to government, you're going to go across to government,
right,
or actively going across to government with a program called Arthritis 101. And just really quickly, if you could,
sure,
tell us what Arthritis 101 is.
Right. It's embraced in a sense in the title, but it's an awareness raising, it's a screening, and it's a lecture. But it's a good lecture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an engaging lecture. And we give these power brokers in our medical system, we give them breakfast, and then we give them a short, very focused expose on arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
Just to deliver to them key messages around some of the things we've talked about this morning.
So the standards, they're getting a set of
the
those.
The standards, yeah. The impact of the disease, the costliness of the disease, the issue areas,
right,
the gaps. And then we give them an opportunity to be screened. And this can be a real eye-opener, and not only in terms of their discovery that it isn't rocket science,
yeah,
that we can do a quick, effective screening, but sometimes, you know, we make discoveries of their own disease process,
wow,
that they, you know, they weren't aware of. And that, believe me,
it's powerful.
Is very powerful.
Yeah.
Or you find that they've got a family member, and the family member has been having problems, but nobody's really brought any focus to bear on that. I had a very interesting meeting with one member of parliament whose husband was in a desperate way with an osteoarthritic hip, and who just listened with rapt attention to what we had to say, because no one had ever, you know, given her a primary understanding around the disease,
right,
and how to go about dealing with it.
Right.
So it's a graphic demonstration of the standards, of the three priority standards, and we're going to do that bump right across the country progressively from one province to the other. We had never done it before with the federal government, and I think it was just wonderful.
Did you have someone in Ottawa who was championing the Arthritis 101?
Well, we had a whole variety of players. We went to all the parties.
Right. So nonpartisan in approach.
Nonpartisan in approach, and we had terrific turnout. We had some key opinion makers like André Picard from the Globe and Mail, who, as you probably know, does wonderful health reporting.
Yes.
We had the Abbott Arthritis Suit, which you may have heard about or seen.
Yes.
But this is a suit that the wearer puts on and then experiences
what it's like to have
arthritis. We had a really, I would say it was an event with splash. It made an impact. And I was talking to Senator Pat Carney the other day, who came. And as you know, Pat has been very active in arthritis.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, and she has it. And has been a real champion here in British Columbia.
Yeah.
And Pat said she was tickled pink with the program in Ottawa, and she was particularly taken, I think, by the screening component, because she said, you know, we had shown that this was not rocket science,
right,
and that there were solutions that would assist in timely diagnostics that were not costly, were not complicated, were doable, that could be done in other nodes in the healthcare system. And she said, you know, I live on Saturna Island, so, you know, I don't have a rheumatologist at my beck and call, and many, many people in this country don't, but at the same time, we need to be able to have our disease pinpointed.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think I wish you the best of luck with the continuation of Arthritis 101. I know some of the provinces have yet to run it, but they're upcoming. And if you're a listener who wants to get involved, you can certainly go to the Alliance's website, which is www.arthritisalliance.ca. You can also find the Alliance through ACE's website, which is www.arthritisconsumerexperts.org. So we encourage you, if you have access to the internet, to please scoot to those websites to learn more about the Alliance for the Canadian Arthritis Program. I can't thank you enough, Gordon, for coming in and really elegantly sharing with us I think a lot more about the Alliance and its work and how vitally important it is to people living with arthritis in the country, that our groups are all united under the Alliance sort of umbrella voice, if you will, means a lot to me as a Canadian living with the disease. And I hope that our listeners and everyone with arthritis in this country feels compelled, feels empowered to get behind the Alliance and help power it with its own volunteer efforts. And it's as simple as just talking to your own MLA or MPP or MP about the work of the Alliance and inviting them to visit the website and contacting the Alliance to learn more about the standards for arthritis prevention and care. So, Gordon, thank you so much for coming in. And we are definitely going to, we'll gently twist your arm again to come in and sit with us and to give us an update on the implementation of these standards.
Cheryl, thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this. I'm just thrilled to bits with the whole podcasting initiative that you've undertaken. I'm so appreciative of the work that Arthritis Consumer Experts does in getting the messages out on every level to all of our audiences. Mm-hmm. And I would be delighted to come back for the sequel.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Gordon.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this version of Joint Health Podcast. And thanks to you, our Joint Health Podcast audience, for listening. As with all of ACE's programs and services, please keep in mind that the information provided in Joint Health Podcast is not medical advice, and ACE does not brand or promote any product or company. The information provided is to help you better understand arthritis and help you talk to your own rheumatologist or healthcare provider to make the best treatment decisions for yourself. Again, thank you for listening.